How would you like to multiply your money with financial epiphanies? Scott Yamamura will tell us how to do it. And what's so special about Scott is he's a financial coach and author of Financial Epiphany. And he has spent 25 years mastering the art of clear communication. And as the head of video communications for a Fortune 15 company, he simplifies complex ideas for over 300,000 employees worldwide on a regular basis. And now he brings the same clarity to personal finance by sharing three breakthrough rules of thumb that give audiences the empowerment with finances they've always wanted. So, Scott, tell us about what would be the first step for someone to multiply their money.
Welcome to Awakened Titans Podcast with Lily Patrescu. Mind-blowing conversations with influential business titans sharing how you can manifest abundance, love, joy, success through quantum awakening, quantum manifestation, quantum healing, quantum miracles, exponential business growth, and innovative products and services.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's three rules of thumb that I like to share. And the first one, they go one at a time, is realizing we need to simplify things and think of what is the most common path that people take when they invest, right? So money, we know, can be very intimidating and very overwhelming for many of us. So we might act timidly, like I did when I first got started. We want people to act with confidence and to be able to jump right in knowing exactly what they're doing. So the first thing is understanding what is happening to your money when you do invest. What's a normal rate of return? Well, the simplest math actually comes from 7.2%. Now, when you use that number, which is like a Goldilocks number, it's not earning too much, it's not earning too little, it's kind of right in the middle where stocks, bonds, or 401k or an individual retirement account can achieve something like that over the long term. And when you look at what works for most people most of the time, you can get these epiphanies. So the first one is, well, if you invest $1,000 and you wait, say, 10 years, what's happening to it? Well, at that 7.2% rate of return, it's doubling. So we're taking one of the simplest concepts out there, doubling, and one of my favorite numbers out there, 10, and we're putting it together into one rule that we can use to understand money for a lifetime. Money can double every 10 years. That's the first epiphany, and it simplifies things. And you can keep it up here and use it anytime for the rest of your career and investing life. So you want me to go on to the other two?
Yes, let's go for the next ones.
Okay. So the second financial epiphany is who works just 10 years? We talked about money doubling every 10 years. Let's apply it to 40 years, the average working career duration. Well, if money doubles every 10 years without even touching it, without even putting in a dollar more, you wait 10 more years, it's doubling again. And doubling again and again until we retire. So let's put those numbers on. So $1,000 invested when you start your career without doing a thing else. 10 years later, it doubles to 2,000. In your early 30s, in your early 40s, it doubles to 4,000. In your early 50s, it doubles to 8,000. And then when you retire around your 60s, it's 16,000. That is what is happening with our money. We now are quantifying and we're putting numbers to the big mystery of save early, take advantage of compound interest, which is all true, but it doesn't lead to confident action. But who thinks of money like that? Most of us are impatient. 40 years? Like, I don't want to wait for that. So we actually have to think about the now-minded people, the people who want instant gratification. So you flip things around. And when you do that, you tell someone, instead of waiting for money to grow by 16 times, you tell someone, you have the ability. You have the multiplying power of 16 when you start your career. You have ownership over this. It's like athletic ability. And when you have this ability, you take ownership over it. And the third epiphany, if you start your career with this multiplying power of 16, the third epiphany says every 10 years, your multiplying power actually cuts in half. Wow. So if you have that multiplying power of 16 when you start your career, 10 years later, it's only the multiplying power of 8. It just cuts in half. 10 years later, it's a multiplying power of 4, and then 2, and then 1. And when you realize your multiplying power is diminishing over time, you're more likely to act. It takes advantage of loss aversion, that psychological phenomenon in us that causes us to act more with more impact if we're losing something. So instead of gaining money, we're more likely to act and invest if we think we're losing multiplying power. So those are the three epiphanies. They work together and they get us motivated to steward our finances and not squander it, to take action.
Thank you. Now, imagine someone who is getting started and doesn't feel like they have any money to invest. What would you say to those people?
Yeah, absolutely. So I like to once again start with multiplying money is like athletic ability. So say you were an athlete and you knew you had this amazing talent and you had bad grades. So your coach is telling you, well, you cannot play sports. You got to get your grades up first. That's like being in debt. Well, an athlete will work even harder, be even more motivated to do the really difficult task of getting their grades up so that they can take advantage of their athletic ability and score those points and win those games and win those championships and make a mark while they have the opportunity, that window of time. So with money, I like to tell people, you have this ability. It's like athletic ability. Let's get you out of debt because you have this multiplying power of, say it's 16. That is incredible. That is amazing. And so let's take advantage of this. That should be your motivating factor, right? So it's positive. You have an ability. And so that's where I like to start. Then I like to tell people, all right, what do you do to get that money? Well, most of us know you could do overtime, pick up a gig. If you're putting money into retirement, you can actually put a stop on that temporarily so that you can pay off on this debt, because so many of us, it's hard to juggle many, many things and have our money split up in so many different ways. So focusing on small debts and paying that off and putting everything towards it makes sense. And third, and you keep on moving through, you want to free up your money to go multiply. Once again, it's just like getting on the field and playing sports. Can't do so if you have bad grades. Let's get your grades up. Let's get that debt paid off and never go back to it. And then we have that money free to multiply and create a more healthy financial future.
Thank you. How about people who actually are not only able to actually save, they're in debt? Where would someone like that start to get out of debt so they can have something to invest with?
Yes, yes. So that overlaps with some of what we had mentioned, where it's, you know, you have to decrease your expenses, right? So if at all, decrease expenses. So some people are, I mean, we're going to temporarily put a pause on some things and get out of this because we're in one phase, we're in debt. We want to get dig ourselves out of that ditch so that we can free up our money. So it's worth it to take some time, even a few years to do this. So we're going to increase we're going to decrease our expenses and we're going to increase our income. So decreasing expenses is, what are the things that you can either sell off or quit? It might be subscriptions you're not using. Okay, you're not using the gym membership. Okay, you're not using that streaming service, or you could consolidate. So you're going to look at doing those things. And then there's, what you can you sell? Well, a big thing is, what if you actually bought a car that's so expensive and the car payments are so big, and it's guzzling gas, and it's this huge expense that maybe you could sell that thing and get thousands of dollars off of it and not pay, continue to pay a car loan. And then you can free up some money that way. So you wanna definitely look at decreasing expenses. And those are just some ideas. And then once again, to the other category, increase income through overtime. You could look at selling things as well, but really, look at this period of time where you jump on this thing to get rid of debt and focus on that. And once again, even if you need to stop, put a pause on retirement savings, that could free up some money as well, right? And you put that towards your debt and you reduce these debts, and then that's the way out of it. You pay off your small debt first, then your next smallest one, then the next, and you just take it in a row like that, using what's called the debt snowball to get yourself out. That creates psychological momentum and a positive path out of being in debt.
So let's say someone had like 10 different smaller debts and then a really large one. where would they get started to actually close off all of these little debts that perhaps have like financial commitments that have to happen every single month? Let's say all on direct debit, where they have to pay, I don't know, $200 or whatever amount every month. There's the big one, which where they have to pay, I don't know, $2,000 a month or whatever. And they're all coming out. And imagine someone is making less than what they're supposed to be paying out every month. Where do they go from there?
So one way is to pay the minimum on everything except for the one that you're going to pay off. So you would pay minimums across the board on nine of them, and then the one you're just going to attack, and you're gonna pay down, and that's the smallest one, right? It doesn't matter what interest percentage is being paid on each. I recommend attack the low-hanging fruit. I recommend attacking the smallest one first. That's what works for me. If it's different for you out there as a listener, then you have to go about this in the way that works best for you. But I like to attack and get rid of instead of having 10 debts, reducing it to nine debts as soon as I can, right? And then so but attacking the smallest one first. Now, once again, using the debt snowball, you get rid of these debts. The smallest one are going to disappear the fastest, right? Because they're the smallest dollar amount. And that creates that psychological momentum. Okay, we've got eight debts. Okay, we've got five debts, four debts, three debts. And then when you have one debt left, say it's a student loan or even a house, and a house actually gets a free pass. Paying off a house can take 30 years. And most of us are going to have to take out a loan, a mortgage to own property. Many of the other expenses out there, it's possible for many of us to actually purchase something that is within our means. So it might not be a new car, it might be a used car, or it might not be this really expensive out-of-state college, it might be the in-state one. And so there's always choices as to how expensive a thing we purchased. And then we can work it off to try to have zero debt or as little debt as possible. But yeah,
Now,
once again, the big one could be a mortgage, and that one I recommend paying down early as well, paying down on principal and paying less interest over the years.
thank you. Give me an example of, let's say, imagine someone needs to pay $2,000 a month for their mortgage. Is there an incentive in them, let's say, paying $2,200 every month? What will that do over time? Will that help to clear that fast? I mean, it's obvious that it will, but
Yeah,
I mean, like in terms
sure.
of like reducing the interest one, because I've never done that, so I'm not so familiar with what the impact of that would
Oh
be.
yeah, I've done it. I've paid off two places early. So there was a one place that had. I'll tell you the trick that I used was it was a 30-year loan, right? And it was 5.75% or so on the mortgage rate. So there you go. So what you want to do is if you find that a rate that you're being charged, 5.75, can be reduced by 1 point or so, then that might be a chance to refinance. So I did do that. So when the interest rates went down, the market is going to have rates go up and down. You look for that, and then you snag it when you can. So when I could get down to 4.0, somewhere around there, then I refinanced. Instead of it being a 30-year loan, refinance down to 20 years. So I cut off years. Plus refinance. And in between, what to get at what you're talking about would make extra payments towards principal. When you put extra payments towards principal, you're paying more up front, but you're actually eliminating years off the back end of having to pay. You don't have to, your mortgage is shortening. And what you're doing is you're eliminating interest. So you're no longer paying the bank or the lender as much as you would have otherwise. It's one of the most incredible things. It makes you feel like you're on the offensive and that you're in control when you're doing something like this. The big thing is you cannot be house poor to begin with. So you want to choose a house that is not maxing you out with your mortgage every month. Like you have no money left after that. You want to have money left. You want to have the choice and the option to pay down faster on your principal. So that's the other thing. Don't buy the most expensive house you can. Buy one that's maybe a little further out if you have to, or a little less, so that you can pay it off early. And then once again, on that same story, I was at a 4.0 interest rate, and then rates went down again. So then I refinanced yet again to get under 3% and went from a 20-year loan to a 15. And so all the while looking to reduce the number of years when you refinance and looking for that chance to lower 1% or more in your interest rate, and in between paying extra on principal. That's the way to attack it. That's how I turned a 30-year loan into 12 years. And that's how I turned another 30-year into 5 years.
Thank you. And you thank you. What's the best way for someone like me? Like, for example, I've only invested in property. So that's the only thing that I know. I have never invested in Forex or other stuff. And you mentioned, okay, the best way to multiply your money is to invest. But for that, you have to have quite a lot of knowledge about where to invest so that your investment actually yields the kind of return that you mentioned of 7.2% on average. So tell us, what is the best way for someone to first find out where to invest safely in a way that they don't actually lose their money? Because, you know, every time you invest, there's always that risk of losing all of the money.
Absolutely.
So what can someone do to kind of get that kind of right knowledge? And where do you recommend people do invest so they can get that good return?
Yeah, thanks for asking that. So most people have actually a low level of financial literacy. Most people are living paycheck to paycheck as well. So I'm glad you asked about debt. 78% of us, some studies show that are living paycheck to paycheck. 77% of us are in debt. So most of us don't need a complicated answer. The average earner and worker just needs a simple answer. We don't want to be overwhelmed and intimidated like I used to feel. And so where do you go? Simple solutions that work for most people, right? That's what we're talking about here. So if your employer offers a 401k retirement plan, that is the place to go first. It has the four advantages that I talk about. Some of those are going to be that 7.2% rate of return may be achievable. There may be that your company's throwing in and matching your giving or your investments, and they're throwing in extra money on top of that. So company matching. And then time grows this money as well. And there's tax advantages. I mean, you can't beat that combination, those four advantages of a 401k. So start there if one's available. If one is not, start an individual retirement account, an IRA, right? That's going to have three of those advantages, all the same ones that I just mentioned, except for the company matching, because it's an individual retirement account. You're doing it yourself through a brokerage firm, say a discount brokerage firm like Charles Schwab, Fidelity, or Vanguard. Great places to consider doing that, where it's sort of a do-it-yourself opportunity via creating a account on their website where you can manage these funds yourself. So we just talked about 401k, IRA, or just going to a discount brokerage firm once again and starting an account that's taxable, a taxable brokerage account, and buying funds there. So what do you go and buy? Well, Warren Buffett, the most famed investor in the world, says, go get an S&P 500 index fund. The S&P 500, the 500 biggest companies that offer stock in the United States. So at the top, you're going to have companies like Google, Meta, Nvidia, Facebook, Microsoft, Netflix, all these companies up at the top that are recognizable. And you're investing in 500 of them. Now, if we work at many of these and are doing our best in our jobs, and these companies are doing their best to create a profit, that's a really reliable place to put your money where it's going to grow. So the S&P 500 index fund, and the other simple answer is a target date mutual fund. So many stocks and bonds, and based off of your retirement age, it shifts over time to become more conservative. Some people don't want to think about their money or change it as they reach retirement, but this target date mutual fund will do that for you. So those are two places, two types of funds you could purchase within a 401k, an IRA, or a brokerage account.
Thank you. For people that don't live in the U.S., what global investment advice can you give to people that don't have access to the U.S. market?
Yes. So the international index funds, there's some that are doing very well right now. So those would be several equities, several stocks and such internationally. And that's another good way to go. And there's indexes that track these stocks. But then there's these funds that try to mimic these indexes. So there's going to be several options out there, several opportunities. You want to look at the performance in the past. How long has this index fund existed? And also, how has its performance been? Is it achieving that 7.2% rate of return that we're talking about? Some of them are doing quite a bit more right now. So look at its performance and see what sort of rate of return it's been getting. But yeah, a little bit of research and getting into whatever country that you're living in, the common discount brokerage firm that's available in your country to see what they offer.
Thank you. What about something that is a little bit simpler? Is there anything that is simpler in terms of investment opportunity that most people can learn how to do it and they don't have to go through all these brokerage firms and so on? Is there anything that's simpler than this or no?
Well, the most handholding we're going to get is definitely from our employer's retirement plan, because they figure it out a lot for you. In fact, some places will automatically enroll you into a retirement account. And I know the company that I work at, there's an auto increase where it'll automatically have you save into this account every year. And every year it's going to increase 1% more. So it'll cause you to invest more and more and more automatically. And that's really the beauty in all of this, is to automate things. And so the retirement plan that may be available at your employer, it's going to be the easiest, because you can call for help. You can call your human resources department, and your company has created a relationship with a brokerage firm, and they're there to serve you. And there's a lot of money coming from the employees of that company to that brokerage firm. So they're there to help and to help you do this well.
Thank you. What about people who already have businesses and they're generating income from their regular businesses? And is there anything they can do to invest in any aside from what you mentioned?
Yeah, I have a side business, and I also have an account for investing for my side business. So the idea there is to invest in similar vehicles. In this case, not retirement related, but a brokerage account is what I invest in. And just to give people an idea of a plan you have out there is, say you have an account for your own retirement that's separate, and say you have an account for your business to benefit your business and create money for your business in the future. So let's say someone sets aside money, and say they happen to be able to set aside $25,000, and it takes a few years to do that. So they have $25,000. Well, we just talked about, what if you did nothing to this money? You didn't even touch it and you waited 10 years. Well, that 25,000 is going to double to 50, and you don't touch it again. 10 years later, that 50 doubles to 100,000. And so now you've doubled your money twice. Now, an idea is, you don't touch the goose, you call this the goose, but it's laying a golden egg every year. How much? We talked about maybe 7.2%. So there's $7,200 in this case, US dollars, I'm talking about, coming out every year, and you can spend that. And then the next year, another golden egg is laid, $7,200. And then you can spend that for your business. And that keeps happening over and over and over and over again. In theory, market goes up and down. Some years may be more than 7.2, some years may be less, where you don't want to pull out at all. But that's a great idea for a business, because now you've created this goose that lays these golden eggs. It's also called an endowment, when you create a sum of money and you just pull out the growth that happens each year. And it's like a factory that makes money for you for free every year once you've built up the that initial goose.
Thank you. What about for people that actually make a lot more than 7.2%? It doesn't make sense to put them in a something that can make just 7.2 if their property business or whatever makes a lot more, right?
Yeah, 7.2 I like to throw out there, because once again, the average worker is not utilizing investments. And so just trying to simplify and get them to do at least that, many investors don't make that. But there are going to be the savvy people that can do more. So what I always say is start with simple, right? Because we're trying to get more people to invest. You know, if 4 out of 5 folks are struggling with money, we're trying to get more people to invest. But there are people that are already doing well and healthy with it, and they can get a greater return. So when I began, I had a pretty normal return. But then once I got very comfortable with this and I noticed that money can double every 10 years, then I wanted to say, okay, I got that figured out. Now let's try some other things on top of that. I can take on more risk because there's a bulk of money that's doing fine already. And so for those people that have more to invest or are more savvy or want to get greater returns, you absolutely can, right? So, and you can play around with some aspect of your money. You know, is it the top 10% or is it 30% or is it 50%? And you're trying some riskier trying to go after some greater returns, and you have the ability to, because you have a foundation in place. You always want to make sure you take care of yourself and your family and your future. And then you have the opportunity to seek after greater returns after that.
Thank you. What would you say to people who are actually afraid to invest because they're afraid of losing that money that they have earned in a very hard way?
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's scary. I had heard that stock markets and equities were like gambling when I grew up. That was the myth that I was told. Then I realized, oh, it's investing in these companies that I work at and that I believe in. And so that's where I really want to demystify things, is let people know, yeah, if you trust in the companies that are creating these things that you buy, that you use, that you stream video and shows off of, then do you trust those companies and do you want to help them do better by believing in them and investing in them? So you can always do that and take that mindset thinking. And some people want to invest more conservatively. And so before you invest in, say, an index fund, 500 of your country's top companies, you could look at what is also available from your bank. So there could be something like certificates of deposit where there's a guaranteed return. It's going to be lower, but it's a guaranteed return. There's other things that we would call in the US a money market account that might have a little bit higher interest rate at a bank. So you can have some of your money there. That way you feel secure by having some money always guaranteed that's earning something in a bank. And then you also have this money that has some risk involved, yes, but is going to gain multiple times more over the long run. And the main thing to look at is one of the graphs of what happens to the stock market over time, which is it goes up. It kind of is up and down, but it's always going up over time. So that's reassuring to see.
Thank you. What's the best way for someone to build multiple baskets where they put multiple eggs that kind of continuously bring them revenue, aside from what you mentioned?
Yeah, you make me think of what I call growing a financial garden. So I think of when you start an account, it's like planting some seeds. It's not going to be a tree the next day. These things take time, right? That's the main thing we're talking about here. Money grows with time. We've been talking about sets of 10 years. So I like to say grow a financial garden. So the first account that I had really started besides a bank account was my 401k or my retirement plan at work, right? So that's the first one. And then got to the point of, well, I'll jump over to my son having a child and saying, I want to save for my son's college. So let's put money into this tax advantaged account for his schooling. So that's another one. And I showed my son and I taught him along the way. He was 7 years old when we started that account, and we stopped putting money in at age 9. And my wife said, what are we doing? Don't we need to keep putting money into this college savings until he goes to school? And I said, no, we're going to put this theory to the test. We're going to wait and see if it doubles. And the money doubled. So he's had enough money to go to in-state school for quite some time now. He's 16. He's not even in college. And he's got plenty of money to take care of his tuition already. So he got to see his money double. He really believes in things now. As parents, we also started a custodial account. And I really like to share about this one because, once again, when I grew up, the stock market, what I was told is gambling. But what we've done is taking gift money or holiday money and said, okay, son, what stock do you want to buy? Do you want to get Amazon? You know, do you want to get Microsoft? Do you want to get, we'll choose a set of stocks he can choose from and he'll pick one. And then, you know, his birthday comes and he'll pick one and we'll buy it for him. But then he gets to really see what happens. So when the pandemic happened and he saw that Amazon did really well because everybody was getting home deliveries and Netflix did really well because everybody was streaming videos at home. Well, he got to see what happens when there's a disruption, a market disruption, and learned along the way. So he's growing up not afraid, where I was fearful of investing, like you had brought up there. But consider growing a financial garden over time. These different accounts have different advantages. One of them is you want to look for those tax advantages. Putting your money there with a tax advantage is an amazing place to do things. And then you can start other accounts, an individual retirement account. I've done one for my business that we had just talked about. So, and then the beauty in all of that financial garden is you look over here. Oh, my son's school is paid for. You look over here. Oh, you know, I can get this for my business because the business account is doing well. It's like there's a blessing around any quarter, any corner, and it's a diversification strategy as well.
Thank you. What's your opinion on investing in crypto and Bitcoin?
Yeah, so money is a very personal thing, and for some people that feels risky. It feels like, hey, I don't quite understand what that is. And it may not be widely enough adopted for that person to sleep at night if they have a good chunk of money in there. So it's incredibly personal what you choose to invest in. That's why I just say seek 7.2%. Can you get it from crypto? Can you get it from index funds? Can you get it from single stocks? That's a personal choice. And do your research and understand what you're investing in, because some have more risk than others. Do I have a big amount invested in crypto? I've certainly tried it in order to understand it, not to try to fund my retirement or my family's well-being. I'm going to put that in something more reliable. Once again, personal choice. I definitely have tested out different vehicles just to see how they perform and how they behave. And then I decided what was comfortable for myself.
Thank you. Tell us where entrepreneurs can connect with you.
Yeah, absolutely. Financialepiphany.com. That is my website. I have my book that's available from there, free download for learning money basics. And you can also contact me to ask any questions. And when this podcast is available, it'll also have a link from that page.
Follow us for more interviews with world's most influential business titans, providing you with the insights to awaken to your full potential so you can get paid to be yourself, find true happiness, and manifest anything you desire.